Hey, Dan, what's up? Why the frowny face?
I am completely fed up with angry white folks hammering me on social media. No matter what I write, it seems that some branch of the white rage farming community picks a fight with me. I don't think I can take it anymore.
Okay, Dan, I have a suggestion. Why don't you just let me make you an honorary Indigenous person? Yeah, that's what we'll do.
I'm not entirely sure that's a thing. I mean, how am I supposed to become an honorary Indigenous person?
Okay, listen. In our people, we can welcome anyone we want. We can invite them over for dinner. We can adopt them. If you want in, you're in. With my help, of course.
I know you and I are pretty close, but I'm still not sure that other Indigenous people are going to think this is a good idea.
Well, Dan, you know, I've actually done some research on this. And having spoken to a lot of the Indigenous community who listen to this podcast, contrary to popular belief, they say that you are the least objectionable white guy that they know.
I'm not sure that's much of an accomplishment, but let's say I want to do this. How does it work?
Okay, first we have to give you an Indigenous name. Something like, I got it. Migosh Kaji Enine. Just say that for me. Okay. Try it.
Migosh Kaji Enine.
Fantastic.
Now, what does that mean?
We'll get to that. Then we have an initiation ceremony. You'll be given a series of tasks. They'll involve mind-altering substances. I'll leave you naked in the bush somewhere, and I'll just let you figure it out on your way home.
Wait a minute. That's basically that scene out of Bruce McDonald's film, Dance Me Outside, where a bunch of Indigenous kids make fun of a white kid by putting him through a fake initiation ceremony.
Okay. You got me. You don't have to do any of that stuff. If you want in, you're in.
So tell me, my name, Migosh Kaji Enine, what does that mean anyways?
Annoying man. So what are you going to do as your first official act as an honorary Indigenous person?
Well, now that I know the meaning of the name, I'm going to change all my social media handles to Annoying Man.
The Winnipeg Free Press proudly presents, in partnership with CJNU 93.7 FM, Negan and the Lone Ranger. Here are your hosts, Negan Sinclair and Dan the Lone Ranger Lett.
Bonjour, tansay, hello everybody. Welcome to another episode of Negan and the Lone Ranger. And it's a big moment because we have a president of the United States that's been a former president that's been found guilty of all charges, and people are saying a porn star has saved America.
I'm gonna wait a little while before I get into who's saving what in America, but I do know I was at the gym when the verdict came in. You know, I got my New York Times news breaking news alert. Went to the app. It was fantastic because the New York Times app's pretty cool, but they replicated, you know, like the big single headline front page, and it just said Trump guilty on all counts. And it was just like, I was surprised and was showing it to everybody. Yeah, it was crazy.
And that it was sort of universal, and there's been a few interesting sort of funny things on social media. We ran in the Free Press an immediate announcement that Trump can now no longer enter Canada because of being convicted of a felony. Yeah. But
one of the worst parts of the whole thing.
I'm posted my own opinion. People can check that on social media. I called it freedom. But there was also a really interesting meme, people, like, because they keep saying, we're going to make an appeal, we're going to appeal this. But then somebody posted the picture of who are the appellate judges in New York, and they're all African-American women.
Yeah. Wrong audience, wrong time. No, the best part for me was, because, you know, there's some speculation about the conditions, like the sentencing. Will there be any jail time?
Will he pick up garbage on the side of a highway as community service?
Yeah, whatever. But the one thing that everybody seemed to agree is that, you know, he has voted in Florida. He's always voted in Florida where he has Mar-a-Lago and, you know, that's what he considers to be his permanent residence, even though he obviously is a big New York City guy. But in Florida, your felons are not allowed to vote until they complete their full sentence. So that would mean, like, even if he was sentenced to probation, he would have to go through several years of probation before he would be allowed to vote. So,
if there is anything that this trial and the charges and maybe the entire Trump presidency, just unprecedented. I mean, people just, the systems do not know how to handle this incredible series of anomalies, if you can call them anomalies. And in many ways, they've exposed a great deal of gaps for people who decide to flout or ignore or just outright deny the law.
Yeah, I think that the first Trump presidency was when a lot of Americans, a lot of people around the world began to see the fragility of democracy. And remembering, of course, that all of the periods of history that involved, the worst expressions of dictatorship and authoritarian rule started with the co-opting of democratic institutions, the passing of legislation, the issuing of policies and regulations to bureaucracies to enforce racist or authoritarian, so nobody ever just steps in and declares it to be a dictatorship. They slowly, kind of work their way into democratic. I think people saw how close they were to something like that in the first Trump presidency. And right now, I point to the confidential documents case in Florida, and a judge that Trump appointed has basically thrown the game. Like, she's basically perverted the progress of the trial to delay it beyond the election in really shameful and transparent ways. I mean, there's no mystery about what she's doing. Well, but, once the judiciary – it's not just a difference of opinion or a philosophy. Once the judiciary begins to subvert
– the very law.
The justice system to serve a politician, then, you've moved another step closer to the bad place.
This story is yet to play out. It really is true that this isn't done, and we certainly will see the sentencing. But on top of that, what's the major role with, the number one thing that Trump did when he came out, there was the conviction, and it was that saying, oh, this was a riding that, this was a state that has minimal support, that was intended or biased from the beginning. When a jury is 100% finding you guilty in the short period of time, there is certainly ways that you can co-opt this verdict, regardless of how much evidence, regardless of the justice that the trial took place or the balanced arguments, whatever you want to say. This will be co-opted and put into a political framework. And undoubtedly, what will happen is the sentencing is only a couple days before the National Republican Convention.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think in a broader sense, there are various phenomena flowing through the U.S. electorate that are defying history and what we know about how public opinion affects voting, and, terms like Trump amnesia have now worked their way into the basic political discourse. So, I've been reading in the Washington Post, the New York Times, and other, legitimate news organizations, stories where they're interviewing voters who voted for Trump in 2016 and 2020, and people who are undecided. And it's remarkable that they don't care about the trials and the criminal charges. They seem to think, the economy was much better and I was in much better shape financially when Trump was president, so I guess it was Trump.
That's actually the number one argument I always hear from people who are Americans and support Trump is my investments were more rich or making more money under Trump. I can just see this story as endlessly spiraling. And maybe it's the time of year. Maybe, we are springtime here in Winnipeg and Manitoba. It's just been kind of a weird spring full of rain and full of it doesn't quite feel like summer here or spring. It kind of feels like a prolonged winter that just won't go away.
Yeah. I'm wondering, is the drought over? Nobody said it. I think people are afraid to say it. I just said it, but no, I mean, I asked it. But it is, but like, it makes me wonder. I should probably write this as a column. Like, I should pursue this as a journalist and ask some questions of more knowledgeable people. But no, but I mean, seriously, like, it does make me wonder if, you know, we're.
Past the threshold of where we don't have to worry as much about wildfires and go to the old good Manitoba days of worrying about floods?
Yeah, we've probably screwed the whole thing just by even suggesting that was possible, you know, like but I would like to say that despite the fact that it's been slow in coming, today is an important day of spring.
What makes today so special? Let me look at the calendar here.
Well, because it's Short Pants Day. So this is the day that I put my short pants on.
Oh, and I don't pull it out of the old trunk, yeah, and then here you go.
Yeah, and it's short pants now from now until October 1st.
Yeah, you are resistant right till October.
Now. No, I'm taking the moment to declare it. You know, it is short pants season, bitches. Get with the program. Okay. Or like, it's definitely for the podcast. This is it. Less clothes is more now for recording the podcast.
That's a new slogan for a t-shirt right here.
Less clothes is more now. That makes sense.
I'm so glad this is a podcast and we don't have to televise this. You know, before we get to our feature interview, it would be remiss and impossible for us not to talk about the last 48 hours here in Manitoba. It's coming up to Pride Week. Yeah. And a really big time in Manitoba. People are flying in from all across the country. You know, Pride in Manitoba is a long honored tradition. There's a humongous LGBTQ2+ community that takes a great deal of investment going all the way back to the 1970s, 1980s to talk about what the importance of recognizing our relations, caring for our relations. And in the Manitoba legislature on Thursday, Logan Oxenham, who's a MLA for the NDP, in Kirkfield Park. We've talked about, Logan for a number of times during the by-elections now in government. There was a bill 208, which was introduced by the Manitoba government, which recognized a two-spirit and transgender day of visibility, which ended up in, I guess we'll call it a hate-a-thon, or what do we want to call it? It turned into an important discussion around recognizing two-spirit and transgender people in Manitoba, simply just recognizing that they have a day of visibility.
It coincides with the International Day of Visibility for Non-Binary and Transgendered People.
And a series of MLAs from the opposite party, the Conservative Party, voted against it, and some wanted to talk about their vote and some didn't.
Yeah, it's okay. So, you know, I think a lot of people who listen to the podcast will understand the background. We're going to go back to last provincial election campaign in a desperate bid to stave off defeat at the hands of the NDP. The Progressive Conservatives launched a couple of really toxic themes in their campaign. One of them was a very vague reference to how the PC party was going to be the party of parental rights. As much as they tried to soften their stance or kind of muddy the waters. So parental rights is the lexicon of the anti-LGBTQ plus, you know, movement.
Basically, parents having control over what kids see, are exposed to, and then therefore can make choices about.
Well, I would say that's what they say it is. But really what it is a small group of parents wanting to tell everybody's kids and parents.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I was trying to be the most diplomatic I could be there.
Yeah, excellent job. And I can't wait to hear the reader and listener response to your objectivity. So they kind of flirted with this. You know, it's really hard to tell what impact it had. Certainly drew a lot of criticism. Now that they're in opposition, the PC party is conducting a values survey. And the president of the party, Brent Pools, has come out and said that neither parental rights nor the, hey, we're the party who won't search the landfill crap that we also went through, that's not what the PC party is about. He's disowned those policies.
Totally disavowed.
But the elected caucus, those who remain, have not disavowed it. And so when Logan Oxenham introduced this private members bill, And not to diminish the importance that Logan and others in the NDP would put on having a day to recognize two-spirit, non-binary, and transgendered people. It's a separate issue, but it's also primo politics.
I was going to say, yeah. it's hard not to see this as political. But it also, you know, not to take in any way the importance of the day. And I think we all know that we all have to do better as a society to recognize and see our two-spirit and transgender relations. And we have them in government, the Deputy Premier of Manitoba. And so importantly, this was something that passed, of course, because with the majority NDP. But then things got really ugly because the Conservatives really don't have a uniform response to this issue. So being exposed, it was a free vote day, meaning you're allowed to vote how you wish or according to your constituents or your conscience.
The PCs decided that it was a
free vote for them. For them. And so we saw some PC MLAs support it. Many more did not. And some wanted to talk about it and some didn't. But what ended up happening was kind of this, we could talk about who wanted to talk about it, who didn't want to talk about it. But then Premier Wab Kanew really turned this into an issue of how dare you vote against this bill.
He called it a hateful and shameful act.
He said, no one's asking you to go to Pride. No one is asking you to be gay. How can the PC caucus allow themselves to be divided? And calling it, of course, a shameful display and an act of hate. You know, pretty strong words.
Yeah, strong words. And, you know, everybody will have to make up their own mind about whether the whiff, more than whiff, the stench of political opportunism undermines what the NDP is saying. I would say that, you know, only two of the Tory MLAs who spoke who voted against would actually explain why they did it. And so I'm going to give a little respect to Conrad Narth, who is a rookie Tory MLA. So he voted against it and he came right out of the chamber afterwards and he faced reporters and he told them why he didn't like it. And I mean, the issue is there is a reference in the bill, to the fact that youth are self-determining when it comes to gender identity,
agency,
and that, also that they should have access to whatever medical care that they need to support their decisions. And of course, that is at the crux of the parental rights movement and the anti-LGBTQ plus is this idea of particularly younger youth and decisions that they may make to alter their gender medically. And, so the bill, it's very clear where the bill stands. And Narth, you know, respect. I disagree completely with what he said. And the other thing is that also he's one of these things like, I'm inclusive. Like, I've never excluded anybody, and I don't hate anybody.
He gets the quote of the day, actually. And,
yeah.
And the quote of the day that he said, I've never hated a person in my life, said Narth. What I saw during question period today, though, was absolute hate from the other side of the floor.
Yeah.
Which turned into, like I said, a bit of a hate-a-thon of who can hate each other more. And that whole thing took away, I think, from a really important recognition of a day in Manitoba.
Well, Conrad should understand that the rather intellectually tenuous argument that criticizing for me for my hate is hateful. Because, he's from a rural riding and that dog don't hunt. When you oppose something that would provide mental health and primary medical support to people who are more likely to suffer from mental illness and be vulnerable to things like suicide, who are subjected to so much hate and systemic discrimination. So when you take steps to oppose supports and protections for those people, if you don't like the word hate, then, you know, we'll try to come up with some other word. But what you're doing is you are leaving someone vulnerable. And so you are, in fact, excluding somebody from the same protections that you and your family have.
It's certainly a moment where you wonder how many fingers are being pointed back and who's pointing what finger at whom. And there's a whole a series of things. You know, Kelvin Gertsen, former leader, also
former interim premier,
did also, he was the only other person to make a comment of what his vote was. He wasn't in the House.
He voted
the legislature
virtually.
And voted virtually. What did he have to say?
Well, I mean, you know, he was consistent, a little more elegant because he's also more experienced. But, you know, that he represents Steinbeck, and Kelvin has actually been fairly consistent and on the record that, you know.
And on the podcast.
And on the podcast. That's right. Not quite a friend of the podcast, but we'll get him back and we'll get him. We'll punch his card a couple more times. No, it's like, I think, you know, most people by now understand the structural arguments that people have against, you know, some parts of the of this private members bill, but also the, you know, the debate over how and when youth should be provided with gender affirming or gender altering support. And, you know, it, like, it's a tough issue, but the point is, and where, you know, like, Wayne Owosco, who's the interim conservative leader right now, progressive conservative leader, he voted for the bill. So, you know, like, I don't want people to think that the entire party.
No, that's what I mean. It's important to mention that there were people who voted for the bill from the conservative side. And this is a recognition of a day. This is not the recreation or the extension of a holiday of some kind that will people, many Manitobans may not even notice that this day is. Maybe they're already doing things to recognize that day and transgender and people. Yeah. But, you know, like, probably the biggest issue, of course, is that a huge amount of conservatives abstained from the vote, which says that this is such a complex, conflictual issue in the party. It's almost like someone wanted to expose that.
Yeah. You know, this, just a personal view here. Like I do anything else on this podcast, right? But, no, but seriously, personally, I am so annoyed by abstentions. The most flattering way you can justify an abstention is to say, honestly, I don't know enough about this issue to say one way or the other. Now, mitigating that as a legitimate excuse is you're a blankety blank elected member of the Manitoba legislature, and you've got no business showing up for a debate and on third reading of a private member's bill that's dealing with an important subject and not know, like, not be educated enough. So that doesn't fly for me. I'm in particular, I'm concerned about the fact that Abhi Khan, the PCMLA for Fort White,
and many people might expect a leadership campaign in the future from.
Yeah, I'll be Mr. surprised Khan. If he doesn't. And I think, you know, given that he's already elected, to the, you know, to the legislature, that gives him a huge advantage. He abstained, and I'm just going to check my email here to make sure that I don't, checking.
An email pause moment for the pod. I believe.
So I put in a question to his office, all of his emails, all of his offices this morning. As of the moment we're recording this, I haven't even received an acknowledgement that they've received my request for an interview with Abhi. And here's the thing. Again, I think, and this is where I disagree with them, but Narth and Gertsen said why they don't like it. Okay. So that, at the very least, is part of the debate. And I do think it's an issue that needs to be debated.
And the fact is, I think people would know where I stand on it. But I would even, you know, like, I want to hear from Manitobans who might not feel comfortable with this bill. We can get out in the open. And I think most of all, we can talk about the very important issue that we talked about earlier, which is that transgender two-spirit youth are deeply in issue, if been affected in mental health on this issue around suicide. And so that affects everybody. So everyone's going to be part of the conversation.
I think also too, like, you know, physicians and their patients are the best people to sort out issues, you know, regarding medical care. This is first and foremost about protecting people in society, that there should be no debate. When I said it was, there are issues to be debated, I guess what I'm saying is we do need to allow people to have their say about it in the hopes that it's a debate that moves people to the right side of things. Yeah, the fact that there are some progressive
putting
conservatives.
Putting youth at the center, all youth at the center is always, that should be the goal of all of us.
But yeah, abstaining and then not explaining your abstention is quite frankly, I think these people need to explain why it is they want to be elected, you know, politicians. Yeah,
if you're not going to take a stand for anything, then what are you there for?
Yeah, if you, you know, yeah, like it's it would be kind of like, you know, a newspaper columnist, you know, saying, yeah, like, that's a really good issue, but I'm not going to write about that because I'd have to take a side on it. You know, actually, you know, I realized I may have actually done that.
Speaking of taking stands and people who have been on the podcast and people who we have almost friend, maybe soon to be friend, maybe already friend.
Two-thirds along the way.
I think we've determined that almost friend of the podcast, Jagmeet Singh, is our special guest this week. He was in town. And like we seem to be getting lucky lately, is federal leaders who come through town, we get them on the pod. You were able to get a interview that was kind of off quietly in a corner, and we're very lucky. Those of you, I think everybody knows who Mr. Singh is, but he's the member of parliament for Burnaby South. He's been heading up the NDP for a number of years now in 2017. And then on top of that went into several federal election campaigns as the leader and is probably best known, I think, for some of his confrontations with hate. That was really where he entered the federal scene, where he became kind of a household name in the country. And now he is the first Sikh and the first member of a visible minority group to be elected to lead a major federal political party in Canada. So we're very happy to get Jagmeet on the pod again, and very happy that you got the interview.
Yeah. So just I think we might have even mentioned this before when we talked about the interview with Prime Minister Trudeau. You know, when you're not doing well in the polls, which the Liberals and the NDP aren't, everybody wants to be on your podcast. And
it's the best time for us.
And when you're running ahead, like Mr. Polyev is with the Conservatives, they don't return your emails. And it's not – we're not – you know, Mr. Polyev and your – people, I'm not taking it personally. I've been around, and I know how these things work. I will say that I do not really have a horse in the race, so I don't really care if you win or you don't win, you're up, you're down, whatever. I do hope that your numbers drop to a level where you kind of think we're a viable option again.
That's another t-shirt slogan.
That's right.
When your numbers get low enough, you come on the Negan and Lone Ranger podcast.
That's right. Yeah. It's, you know, and I will say we have yet to prove that there is a Negan and the Lone Ranger bump.
I think this is a major source of just radical turnaround. So, but you know, all joking aside, we are so happy that we get time with people across the country. We have a big interview coming up in a couple weeks. You'll hear more about it later. But right now, let's get to our feature interview with federal NDP leader Jagmeet Singh.
I'm happy to tell you that this is your second appearance on the podcast. You are one appearance short, one more punch in your card from being officially a friend of the podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. And Negan claims that you get a t-shirt once you're a friend. Now, we don't have them yet, but if you're brave enough to wear Negan and the Lone Ranger, we're definitely going to give you a t-shirt.
Yeah, if you give me a t-shirt, I'll wear it.
Okay, sure. That's fantastic.
I'll even take a picture of it and send it to you.
Thanks very much for making time. Busy, busy time. Mm-hmm. Federal leaders are coming in and out of Manitoba now, like almost every day. And I, you know, I thought long and hard about like, what did I want to ask you?
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe somebody else hasn't asked you. So I'm just going to start with the question that I really want answered, which is what the hell is going on? Like,
In what way?
Well, you know, like, I'm like reading all the tea leaves like everybody else, and I'm looking at polls and I'm watching social media. And, you know, I almost feel like I want to pull that that speech from Bill Murray's from Ghostbusters, you know, like up is down, left is right,
dogs
and cats sleeping together, you know, mayhem. It's not an exaggeration to say that the political environment is mayhem right now, is it?
Things are pretty volatile, I guess, right now. Things are all over the place. I would say, but I would couch it and bring it down, like ground it in the fact that I think fundamentally people are just upset because things are tough. Like it's tough for folks. And things are tough. And I say the biggest thing that I hear is, I guess in Winnipeg and Manitoba is slightly softer. This is not as harsh.
Mm-hmm.
The housing kind of affordability, but still it's become mm-hmm. more of a pressure point for people in Manitoba than ever before. But cost of living is definitely up.
Yeah.
And the major thing that people tell me about when they say cost of living, they think about their regular expenses and they look at their groceries. The first mm-hmm. thing that people tell me, things like their cell phone fees and their internet fees are really high, which is with reason. It's the highest. We're amongst the highest in the world.
Yeah, and have been for a while.
So yeah, so those things are there and they see that they feel like they've got a federal government that's known this or must have seen this and hasn't done anything about it for 9 years now. So they feel like things have gotten worse, not better. And that is a big problem. And so people are frustrated. And then I feel like they're telling me that we're frustrated with the Liberals. We're upset. We're done with them. And then they're trying to say, well, who's going to look out for us? And people are saying, well, I'm worried about Paul Pierre Poilievre. There's a lot of worry. It's not like there's this big romance where people love him. They're like, I'm worried about him. I want an alternative. It might be him, but I'm worried about him. I'm worried mm-hmm. about the things that he would do in conservatives. And Manitobans know that conservatives, they just came off of an election where they rejected conservatives because they did cut the services that people needed, like healthcare and education. So they're worried about that.
So, okay, but would you go as far as to say, and this is parenthetically, this is kind of one of my bugaboos. Like I love a bit of political hyperbole. I mean, I live in it, right? But, the country is broken. Mm. Okay. So like I tend to have kind of almost a visceral reaction to that because, times are tough. They're tough everywhere. I don't know if there are any isolated places in the world that don't have problems. But like accusing or alleging that the country is broken, I mean, that's a pretty powerful image. Is that a bit of hyperbole too far for the NDP?
Well, we don't say that. Yeah. That's something that Pierre Poilievre says, and he says it with reason, because he wants to make the case that government is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the case he's trying to make. He's trying to say, oh, you know, for all your problems, it's actually the government. And what he's doing purposefully and knowingly is ignoring the glaring problem is that Ottawa for too long has been working for big corporations and not for people. Because mm-hmm. when we say people are hurting, you say, yeah, it's hurting mm-hmm. everywhere. There's a big group of people or a significant group of people that are not hurting.
No.
And that's our big corporations are making record profits. The corporate grocery stores are making more money than ever before. Oil and gas companies are making more money than ever before. And I'm saying record profits, not just good profits. For those two sectors, they're record.
Highest ever.
Highest yeah. ever. And then we know the tech sector is making profit. We, you know, corporations are doing well. The CEOs are doing well. It's working people that aren't doing well. So really the problem is not that government's broken. It's that government's been working for the wrong people.
Yeah.
The wrong people are benefiting. And or put better, everyday people are hurting because decisions aren't being made in their interest. And so I point to some things that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
We can take on corporate greed. Like mm-hmm. we can stop that. With the cell phone fees and internet fees, that's fully regulated by the federal government. They've allowed mm-hmm. Bell, Rogers, and Telus to be ripping us off. Doesn't have to happen. We can completely control that. On corporate grocery stores, there are a lot of examples how they are abusing their dominant market share and they are ripping us off because of it. And it's not really hard to believe if you go back a couple of years, 2018,
mm-hmm.
they were found guilty of colluding and working together to rip us off on bread prices. Yeah. So they've done this. It's not hard to believe that they're doing it again. Like it's not by chance that all the corporate grocery yeah. stores are all enjoying record profits and all of us are having a hard time buying our groceries.
No, for sure. The grocery prices though is from a regulatory perspective, is a much different challenge. It's not a regulated industry. So there is no agency law or, this brings me to another point, which is like housing is out of control. Costs are out of control. Grocery prices are largely out of control, although I think they've moderated a little bit recently.
That's right.
One of my main concerns, again, and I'm not saying this is part of the NDP narrative, but it's, attacking the current government for failing to respond to an issue that really no future government, without some very radical moves, is going to be able to solve. So housing, like in Vancouver, Toronto, Calgary, do we really think that it's within the government's power to moderate, to roll back rents and the cost, like the price of buying a house in those markets? Like, you know, I just wonder if in, like, we're feeding the anger and with a disappointment coming on the other end
So I would say, yes, absolutely. There's lots we can do, but I would temper that by saying it's not easy though. Mm-hmm. And it is complex, but there are absolutely steps we can take. And so I wouldn't be so dismissive of the challenges and disrespectful to people with like a slogan that was going to solve it all. Like I hear the conservatives use, I think that's disrespectful and dishonest and doesn't do credit to what's really going on.
I saw an email from Conservative Party, communications, blaming the Trudeau government for a skyrocketing, like a spike in the number of extortions by organized crime. Yeah. Okay. So I understand that it's crime.
Right.
I understand that, you know, government has a responsibility, but you know, like there are some things. I'm not going to blame Trudeau for it, and I'm not going to blame Pierre Poilievre if he can't solve it in the future. Right.
Yeah. So, but there are things that we can point out concretely. Yeah. So while you're absolutely right, it's great to have a conversation with someone who knows files so well, that it's not a regulation issue with the grocery prices. But there are clear examples of our competition laws being too weak in Canada. Mm-hmm. We did a deep dive into this and we have some of the weakest competition laws in the world. And that has allowed these large corporate, many sectors, but in this case, corporate grocery stores, to engage in lots of anti-competitive behavior that would have otherwise been stopped in other jurisdictions.
And raise prices and lock prices. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of things. So what we're pushing for are changes to the laws that govern competition in Canada. The Competition Bureau is an organization that does it, that actually can significantly make life more affordable. And those laws can be changed and they can concretely protect consumers better from things that are making it harder for people to get good, affordable prices for groceries.
Do you not still need kind of a dedicated wing of an agency or a dedicated agency to monitor prices and flag, you know, suspicious?
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Competition Bureau does that in Canada, but they've identified a whole bunch of gaps in their ability to do these things because they don't have the legislative powers that other jurisdictions do have. So we put in place, I put a bill forward that actually makes those changes. We push for changes in the fall economic statement as well as the budget that strengthen protection for consumers, because these are things that could have happened years ago that the government ignored. And we called for it. We said, listen, do something about the corporate greed that's really driving up the cost of living for people. So there are absolutely things we can do on grocery side of things. We've also pointed to a tax on excess profits. And what this is a deterrence when a company is purposely or has engaged in behavior that is hurting Canadians or hurting people. Other countries have done this as a way to give people relief, but also to deter the bad action. And so the United Kingdom, Spain, Germany have all put in place some form of, let's make those that are making record profits pay their fair share. Canada hasn't done that yet. So that's one thing. Stronger laws to protect consumers, another thing. Anti-competition behavior that's going on, stopping that. Going after some of these really concrete things that we can do and we've called for.
I hear you, and I do believe that there's lots of examples of other jurisdictions that have dealt with these issues and their economies did not collapse.
That's right.
Because of it. I think the debate over the recent changes to capital gains is a good example. Like, it's a pretty modest change. like when you get right down.
Yeah.
To it. You know,
we campaigned on going to 75%.
Yeah. And yet, all the medical associations, a lot of the chambers of commerce, Canadian Federation of Independent, like all these organizations came out and said that this was going to hammer productivity. It was going to hammer capital investment. I mean, I don't know any nonpartisan economist who thinks any of that's true, but, but like, if that's like on this tiny little change, if that's the reaction the country is going to make, like voters are, they are influenced by these lobbies, right? So how do you, like, how do you introduce an aggressive tax on, you know, excess profits and get elected, I guess is the question.
Well, I mean, grocery stores are not very popular. So if we say we're going to target corporate grocery stores, which is what other countries have done, they targeted a certain sector.
Industry, yeah.
Absolutely. We can do, we've done it on, we've been able to force this government to do something in terms of going after the excess or the greed of big banks. We've increased the tax rate on big banks and insurance companies. So we can do it. It can be done. And in fact, I would say it's popular. There's a movement where people are wanting to boycott going to the largest corporate grocery store chain, Loblaws. So there is an appetite for it. So I don't think it's a public issue. I think it's the political will that the two major parties that have been in power, conservatives and liberals, don't have any interest in going after corporate greed. They're too close to them, too closely associated.
No.
They're not willing to do it. But this is the right thing to do. And I should add on the housing piece, again, it's not simple. And I don't want to be dismissive or almost...
Well, overly simplistic.
Yeah, is really, overly simplistic, you know, right, about how serious the problem is. But there are key things that the government could have done and has not done. And one of those, just to give you like a one concrete example, is we said use federal land, money, and power to build homes that people can afford. The federal government has been using federal lands, but they haven't stipulated that the homes that are built on federal land are affordable. Or if
only a portion of them,
only a portion of them are. And so that's a problem. I would say every square foot of or square meter of land that we have federally should be dedicated purely to affordability. We went to other countries around the world to get a sense of like how they figure this out. And I met with the housing minister from Germany. And what they pointed out is they have a very diversified market, housing market, where they've got a significant portion of homes that are built that are non-market, whether they're publicly owned or they're a cooperative or they're in a not-for-profit kind of structure. They have a massive amount of homes that people can rent or some form of ownership that are not in that traditional market. There's, of course, private building as well.
Yep.
But we don't have that blend here.
No.
In Canada, we barely have enough rental, let alone having non-market housing. So what we need to do is build homes that people can afford and look at all the different ways they can be truly affordable. And that has to be a big part of thrust. And government can't take a step back and say, oh, we're just going to incentivize building. We have to get back to what we did after the World Wars and really be actively building homes that people can afford.
So, okay. So the NDP, I read an interesting commentary by David Coletto, which I thought was really like awesomely balanced. He made the point that, contrary to some of the more shrill headlines that had come across, the NDP isn't really doing any better, but it's not doing any worse than it has. Like, you're sort of in that historical high teens, you know, to low 20s kind of range of public support. He did say, though, that it was interesting that when you ask people, you know, if you're not going to vote for your first choice, you know, what party would you consider voting for? So you have among the highest accessible voting pool, 40%, which I was, you know, I was really impressed by. Where are we in the evolution of the NDP right now? Do you need Justin Trudeau to drive the big red machine right off a cliff as former leaders did, you know, and throw them into some like an existential crisis so that, you know, you or any future NDP leader can have their sort of Jack Layton moment? Cause it seems like, there's a lot of jockeying around between the conservatives and the liberals, and you guys are kind of there where you've been, close, you know, to something big, but, you know, not being able to break through. So, like, where are we with the NDP?
That's a very, very fair question. And I appreciate you took probably one of the most balanced and I think fair, fair assessments of our
position. Don't tell people that. I get no respect or love for that.
It's true. So. It's true. It is very fair though. We acknowledge that's where we're at, that we're at a point. And I put it in back into, instead of putting it on in the frame of reference of us as a party, I would think about it through the voter, through the person. And I say, okay, what are they going through right now? They're going through this point where they're like, I'm frustrated and fed up with the Liberals.
Angry.
Because they're angry. Yeah. They're like, things aren't better. And then they're like, okay, so what is our choice? And then they look and they're worried about the Conservatives. They are truly worried. So it does open up and they say, okay, well, if I'm worried about them, what are these new Democrats going to do for me? And then it is on, that is where I see a really powerful opportunity to make the case. Well, look at what we've done with our power. Just what's the proof point? Tell you about Susan. Susan is a senior I met in Ottawa at a clinic that takes the dental care program. I met her on Monday, actually. So it was very fresh off the press. It was a very powerful moment that I had with her. She, cancer survivor, senior, retired, has a pension, not a great pension, but she can, yeah. She can make a go of it. Lost her teeth because of her therapy that put her cancer in remission and is in a rough way because it has left, a lot of her teeth are gone, but her roots are still there. Mm. And so it's pretty painful. It's pretty painful. It's pretty rough for her. And she said, in the dentist chair when I was visiting the clinic with the dentist and the denturist, Dr. Lee and Jack, the denturist. And she said, her name is Susan. She said, I just want my teeth back. And the dentist looked her in the eye and said, we're going to get your teeth back. We're going to be able to take care of you. Mm-hmm. We're going to get rid of the pain. We're going to get your teeth back. And the dentist like, yes, we can get, and she knew that she needed, like she was going to need implants or dentures. And she's like, really? Like she was almost in disbelief. I said, yes, we're going to be able to do that for you. And it's going to be covered with this program. And she looked over at me, like I was just kind of off to the side, and she grabbed my arm, like almost like someone that was drowning, and just kind of grabbed my hand and said, thank you. And I looked at her and I said, no, don't thank me. This is what we're here. That's what I'm here to do. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to be able to share that this is working and that people can get this. That's what we've done for Susan and like millions of 2 million seniors have signed up to this program.
And parenthetically, what you've done through the agreement.
That's right.
With the Liberals.
Exactly. Yeah. With the agreement that we've forced this government to do these things. I would now say we've done this. People who are worried about the cost of living, it's not going to be easy. I don't want to suggest to you it's going to be easy, but there is a path for us to take it on. To bring down the cost of groceries, to build homes that are affordable. There is a path for us to do this, and you can trust me to do that. And I feel very confident that I could show people that we are a real alternative for them.
So my personal theory has been that when, like you, like when you talk to people and you listen to what's important to them and what they want, that there should be more people voting federally for the NDP, but they don't. And I think two things. I mean, one is muscle memory is an important element in voting, right?
Yeah.
I think that the second thing, though, is that the people who are most likely to support you are the least reliable in terms of showing up for elections. You know, the most perhaps disillusioned about the importance of their vote. Mm. I will say to you, and I would like you to provide a counterpoint. I don't see the next election as an election that's going to drive record turnout. Mm. I mean, I think that with the anger and the cynicism, I think, is going to, the noise of it will drive a lot of people out of the electorate. Mm. But I suppose there are antidotes to that. It's just that's my great fear is that it's going to be, I had never thought in my lifetime I would see less than 50% turnout in a federal general election. I'm actually kind of concerned that there will be.
Well, I'm concerned about voter turnout in general. Like I mm-hmm. want more people to vote. It's in our name of our party, with the New Democratic Party. We want people to vote, and we know that more people vote, better choice, better decisions will happen. So, I guess you mentioned earlier, we were chatting that what we learned from the Manitoba NDP and the Manitoba election is that a message of hope can work. And they fought and beat Conservatives with a message of hope, a unifying message. They were up against a very divisive, very cynical campaign. I think one that was very much designed to drive down voter turnout, to make it as cynical as possible. And I think with with a strategic purpose that benefits conservatives. And people, I would say Premier Canoe now, but at the time as leader, Wab Canoe believed that Manitobans were better than that. I believe in the goodness of Canadians. Yeah. I believe Canadians want to take care of their neighbors. I believe they want to look out for one another. And I believe there is a path to giving people hope that we can fix the big problems we're up against and make things better, and we can inspire people to come together. And I believe that's fundamentally why Canadians are so proud of things like our healthcare system. While there's been problems, but it's still a source of Canadian pride. It's something that we look at and say, hey, we're better off than lots of people in the world. We're better off than our neighbors to the south. By and large, Canadians believe that. So I would say, I think there's an opportunity to give a message of hope that in this next election, they don't have to be stuck with the routine choices. And now I feel like people are in a different position, because they tell me they're done with the Liberals. They're frustrated and angry. They're worried about the Conservatives. There's an opportunity to say, well, you don't have to choose between these two.
Yeah.
There's another choice, a real choice for you. And we've shown you we can get things done. Yeah. I think often people have looked at us and said, you got great ideas. I don't know if you can get them done. We ran on dental care and pharmacare, lost the election, to put it bluntly. And we have delivered on both of those.
Right.
People are going to get free birth control, free diabetes medication and devices. We have delivered on dental care. People are getting it. It's actually happening. People are in dentist chairs already. I think we're at we're getting close to 100,000. It's well in the tens of thousands of seniors have already gotten care. So imagine every month more and more people are getting care. Mm-hmm. They're saying, oh, this works. And I say, we got that for you. We can also fix these other problems. Yeah. I think there's a powerful opportunity.
So, I think every election's an opportunity. And sometimes you can't predict what's going to happen. You referenced the Manitoba election. Voter turnout actually went down modestly overall. And, the other thing is, despite the fact that, I think the Progressive Conservatives here ran the most toxic provincial election campaign in the history of the country, they came within 25,000 votes. So the NDP vote was very efficient, and they won a convincing majority, but only with 25,000 more votes than the Progressive Conservatives. Again, the caution for me is that, the angry constituency, like the people who are the antithesis to the ones you've just described, they may be more motivated to come out and vote than the people who want progressive, hopeful, like they want to see that they do better, and that everybody does better. Yeah, everybody, you know, I heard a woman on Twitter the other day railing on about how she's heard the word fair too much. Mm. And I just, like, I can't in a million years understand where something like that comes from. But, why shouldn't that same phenomena manifest at the federal level? I guess is the question.
Well, I guess this really highlights something that I maybe did touch on. I want to not ignore that anger. I think a lot of times people, maybe in the progressive side of things, kind of ignore the anger, jump over the anger and start like, oh, we'll fix it. I want people to be angry. That's okay to be angry, because there's a lot of legitimate reasons why people are angry. Like, why is it that you can't afford your groceries? Like, it seems so basic. Like, we should be able to have a job that pays enough to pay your bills, buy groceries, have a place to live. If you can't do all those normal basic things, it feels very frustrating and angry. I remember what it's like. I was 20 and my kid brother had to come live with me when he was 15. And I remember feeling that worry, but I was like a kid in university working minimum wage job. I don't want anyone to have to live like that. And people are living like that, like struggling and wondering how I'm going to get by. I just want to direct that anger at the real causes. The real cause of that is corporate greed run rampant because governments haven't protected you. And I want people to be angry at the right things. Be angry that a CEO is ripping you off and that your governments have let them do that to you. And know that I'm not going to let them do that anymore. And so I feel like what I present is an opportunity for people who are angry to say, like, let's be angry at what's actually dragging, who is ripping you off when you pay your cell phone and your internet fees? Who is ripping you off at the grocery? Who's ripping you off at the pumps? Mostly the real driver of that is corporate greed. And who allowed that to happen? Well, Liberals and Conservatives. So I hope I can make that argument to them, like, yes, let's be angry at the real causes that are driving up our cost of living and here are some real solutions.
The obviously, the conservatives will accentuate this point, and they tend to have kind of a, you know, South American bee swarm kind of approach to social media, that, you know, you were in league with the Liberals. I mean, we saw it even during the provincial election campaign, you know, about the billboards that were here with you and Wob. So, you know, how do you need to, at some point, cut the tie? Like, what do you need to do to make sure that the Liberal brand, if it is headed to the toilet, it doesn't drag you guys down in the swirl?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people need to know that we have fought them, that we are frustrated with them, that it's something that has offended me, that they have so much power to fix the problems people are going through, but have been so lackadaisical about it, so lethargic, so like non-urgent, no urgency. And I think people need to know that we fought to force them to do these things. It wasn't like we were holding hands and kind of going singing Kumbaya or anything. This was a fight. This was a brawl. It was a knuckle brawl. We were fighting every step of the way to make these things happen. And it's something you can expect from me. I'm a fighter. Mm-hmm. I fought my whole life to get to where I am. I had to fight when I was a kid to defend myself. I fought in the ring as a martial artist. I fought in the court as a lawyer. So this has been a battle. It's been a fight. I'm a happy warrior, so people see that happy side of me, but it's been a fight, and I'm ready to fight. I've been born to fight, and I will fight for people.
So, I don't think I could over emphasize the fact that you, among all of the federal leaders, could probably decide when the next federal election is, which is a daunting power to hold. There's no doubt that the Liberals are looking forward to one more budget. Do you have a clear sense of when you would like the next federal election to be? And if so, has the NDP worked on a strategy to call the election on your terms? Because it literally, you can do that.
There's a lot of weight knowing that we're influencing government the way we are. So I take that very seriously. I look to the traditions of New Democrats. What do New Democrats do with our power? We've always used our power for people. Tommy Douglas used it to bring in Medicare, Stephen Lewis, to bring in a lot of the social safety nets that we have, like our EI and our CPP and our old age security, all New Democrat contributions that we use when we had power. Jack Layton did it when he had power. He used it for people. So I want to do that. I want people to be able to benefit from the things that we fought for, so that when an election comes, it can be a referendum on, do you want to keep dental care? Because we're going to keep it and expand it. Paul Yev will take it away. He's already said he will do it. So these are just facts. Do you like that what we've done with free birth control and free diabetes medication devices? Or the choice will be Paul Yev wants to take it away. I want people to be able to experience the benefit of what we fought for to make their lives better, and then have a real informed decision about whether they want to keep it or not, because that's going to be the decision. It's going to be New Democrats will keep it, Conservatives will take it away. Pierre Poilievre will take it away. I will make sure you get that and more. And so I want that choice to be put to Canadians in a real honest way, where they can actually choose, all right, there's a choice in front of me. Do I keep these things that we fought for, or do we let the Conservatives take it all away?
So are you increasingly seeing the next election as a battle between yourselves and the Conservatives? There's a lot of polls and events and, you know, stuff that's going to happen between then and now. But can you kind of foresee when that will be? It's kind of more, that was more the Jack Layton scenario, right?
Yeah, yeah. I see that more and more, like that people, I mean, this is coming from people. When I speak to a lot of people across the country, every province, I tour regularly and I meet with real people. And they've made it more and more clear to me that they're just fed up and done with the Liberals. And it also makes sense. It'll be 9-10 years. And historically, that's when people feel like, you know, I'm just done with the government. So I hear that. I see that. I think that's what people are telling me. And so then they're going to say, well, what's our choice? And then at that point, when they look away from the Liberals and they look at their choices, it's really me or Poilievre. And that is a choice I want Canadians to know, eyes wide open, what they're getting. With me, I'm dedicated to fighting for working people. I've been in the struggle. I know what it's like to not have enough. I remember when my family lost their home and we had nowhere to live for a bit. I remember how hard I worked to make sure my kid brother wouldn't go hungry when I was in university and he was in high school. I remember those moments. Or you got Paul Yev, who wants to take away a school food program, who wants to take away dental care, who wants to take away pensions and EI. He's already said he would cut it. He wants to cut investments in healthcare. And that's the choice that Canadians will have. And I think more and more people think about what it means, like the price of Paul Yev. I don't think people really have considered the price. They're thinking, I'm upset with Trudeau and I'm mad at Trudeau. But what is the price of Paul Yev? I think that's something Canadians have to be confronted with before they can really make their final decision. And then I hope people say, well, you know, maybe it's not him. Maybe it's actually New Democrats. Maybe they're the guys that are going to have my back.
Yagmeet Singh, thank you for making some time. Nobody on the podcast can see this, but there's like a staffer running back and forth, you know, like a gnome waving his arms, trying to get me to stop the interview. So politely, it was a very respectful wave. Like there wasn't any, you know, cutthroat sign, but, you've got a lot of work to do, here in Manitoba. Yep. And, you're opening up a campaign office this Saturday, that used to belong to James Tightsma, the Tory MLA. So that is the political metaphor. Warning sign is going off in the corner now.
That's right. That's right. We're going to put some incense here to kind of purify the space.
Yeah, the bad spirits. Thanks very much for the time.
Thank you.
Best of luck while you're still here. And one more visit to go before we're in t-shirt territory.
That's right. Okay,
good.
Cool.
Okay, thanks.
Sounds good, man. Okay. Thank you.
What a great interview with Jagmeet Singh, and rather unplanned. Dan, what was the best part for you for that interview?
Well, you mean other than watching James Tightsman's sign get blown off the front of the building and come crashing down in an act of absolutely...
Did we have insurance? Do we have insurance?
No. But it was like there are moments of, you know, of metaphor, like where a metaphor arrives and you got to write something and this thing happens and you go, oh, thank you, Jesus. You know, like it's, oh my God.
You're a person of faith or not.
I don't have
not.
To, or, you know, thank whatever, you know, God you pray to. But my point is that, you know, these things are, anyway, so that was the funny bit, you know, that the, they rented the same space as James Dietzma, the provincial MLA who lost in the last election, and they had to get rid of the sign, quickly, and they did it in the middle of a raging rain and windstorm, and it broke. More importantly, though, the interview with Jagmeet Singh. Okay. So, you know, there are probably a lot of people who are wondering about the NDP and Singh because of their deal with the Liberals to keep them in power in a minority parliament. And you know what? And that's like completely legitimate, issue, to use to determine whether or not they're worthy of support. I think you do in the interview, you do need to listen a little bit to where they've moved the needle, policy-wise.
It's pretty impressive if you add up all the things they were able to get done. Studying all the infrequent times that there have been sort of alliances between political parties to keep minority governments in power, I think this is probably the most biggest track record for someone in the minority position in that alliance. Mm-hmm. And the way in which they've been able to achieve what, if you go back to the federal election campaign, they promised several things, pharmacare,
dental care,
areas, the childcare deals that have been across the country. These are things that the NDP are on the record for promising, not so much the Liberals, but of course, I think many times the Liberals are the ones who get to make the announcements for the a deal with the provinces. But it's hard not to see that the NDP maybe has been left behind. And I think they're trying to remind Canadians now that they are the ones who brought these ideas forward and really forced the hands of the Liberal.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people who claim that they prefer minority parliaments. And because they believe that it forces the governing party to consider more options and to broaden their policy, you know, landscape. you know, beyond maybe what they campaigned on. So well, go ahead.
Fosters an atmosphere of collaboration that might not otherwise be present in a parliament.
Well,
notwithstanding the fact that they didn't go into an official coalition. This was literally just almost like a supply and confidence arrangement.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, that's an excellent point. And like further to that, I guess what I'm saying is, and I'm not asking anybody or telling anybody to vote for a particular political party, but if you are or were of the opinion that minority parliaments can be collaborative, 2 points. Number one is they are not normally collaborative, like not to this extent. And number two, just look at the results that came from it and at least consider that, you know, when you're making, you know, value judgments about political parties. I think as well, you know, and again, when you're the third place party in parliament, you have to keep seeing the glass as half full. Singh's version of half full is, you know, going back to Jack Layton's breakthrough, when he was leader of the party when they won over 100 seats in parliament, became the official opposition, largely because there was an implosion of the Liberals under Michael Ignatieff. Okay, so we don't know if the Liberals will ever reach the implosion stage right now, but the point is they're doing poorly. The Prime Minister is unpopular. When Singh says that creates – oh, and they're, he's opposed by a party, the Conservative Party, which is doing well in the polls, but whose leader, Pierre Poilievre, is not liked by Canadians. That creates an opening for the NDP and Yagmeet Singh. And he's not wrong when he says that.
This is the longest serving minority parliament alliance in history. And so, I mean, obviously, it's got to have a track record. It's got to, you know, every single other minority parliament that had an alliance lasted about half this amount. The only other one that's even comparable is going back to between 2008, 2011, almost 900 days. And so the point is that there's a lot to look at here. And I think that it might be, we are living in unprecedented times. Maybe seeing an unprecedented government, whatever political stripe that they are, when people work together, and I think that's what Mr. Singh was talking about here, is things can get done that might be otherwise not done on a big, wide scale. I mean, when would you see the number of national programs being rolled out by a federal government to the tune of, I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars of social investment in the country at a time in which a lot of governments across the world are retracting and talking about austerity.
No, it's an interesting period. And again, not as advocacy to vote for any one party, but there is great contrast right now in the federal political, forum. We are seeing a Conservative Party that is really, you know, sending signals about smaller government and less reach, and a minority Liberal governing party with the support of the NDP that is about, you know, more reach and bigger government and doing more. Without getting into, you know, the rights and the wrongs, because there is no right and wrong. It's just a difference of opinion. There really is no reason not to get kind of ramped up about an election that is probably going to take place next year. I will say, though, that with an unpopular prime minister, very unpopular prime minister, and a very unpopular potential prime minister, leader of the Conservative Party, my greatest fear is that, and we talked a little bit about this with Yagmeet, is the possibility of a less than 50% turnout in a federal election. And I'm going to say that I think it's going to happen, and I hope to come on the podcast. And Nigan, you can tell me how wrong I was when everybody shows up to vote. But I fear that I'm not wrong.
And, no, I think you're pointing to something important there. Huge appreciation for you to get that interview.
Yeah,
and
no worries.
You know, I know you're always hitting the beat and being there for the pod, but also
someone's got to do the interviews. Well, you're out doing God's work, man. You know, you're out like, you know, helping and healing and spirit guide.
Doing a few things here and there. We'll just leave it at that. But a huge thanks to everybody for continuing to support the pod. And I think I've heard more from the past few weeks of listeners, people coming up to me. I did a book launch last night at McNally Robinson. But the number of people that came up to me that said they're listening to the pod, they listen to every single week, they appreciate it, every 2 weeks that we put it out. So a huge thanks to everybody. Huge thanks to, of course, everybody at the Free Press, Paul Simon and Wendy Swatsky, who do such great work to make us look great on the site and putting it out there. And also a huge thanks to Adam here, our long-suffering producer here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And making us also sound so great. And Adam, thanks to you too for organizing the last pod when you're way off on the other side of the ocean there.
No worries.
But doing it for on your vacation. And a big thanks to everybody for you for listening. Big miigwech, and we'll see you next time around.
Adios.